On this week's episode, my special guest is Andrew Harvey. He's got a brand new book out called Turn Me to Gold, 108 Poems of Kabir. I'm Richard Brendan. You're listening to Dying to Live. Andrew Harvey is an internationally renowned religious scholar, writer, and teacher, and the author of more than 40 books, including the critically acclaimed The Hope, Son of Man, and Savage Grace with Carolyn Baker. Born in South India in 1952, Harvey has devoted much of his life to studying the world's mystical traditions, including intensive study of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Sufi mysticism. Andrew's been on the program, I think, oh gosh, maybe 3 times now at least. And I brought Andrew here to Indianapolis area in 2007. We did a weekend workshop on sacred activism. I will always have fond memories of that as well. And by the way, if you'd like more information, his website is andrewharvey.net. Andrew's joining us today from his home in Chicago. Andrew Harvey, it's always a joy to have you on the program. Thank you.
My great joy to be with you, Richard.
I must say, this book, Turn Me to Gold, is one of the most visually stunning books I've had in my hands in a long time. Congratulations on that.
Well, I think that's one of the strengths of the book, because I asked a great friend of mine who's a young Canadian photographer, a brilliant young Canadian photographer, Brett Hurd, to come with me to India. He'd never been. And he took the most astounding photographs, black and white and fierce and poignant and raw, of Benares, Varanasi, where Kabir lived, because the book is 108 translations of this, the greatest universal mystic poet, with Rumi. And I'm absolutely thrilled with what Unity Press has done, Unity Books, because they really went for it and produced this modern, holy, illuminated manuscript that you're holding in your hands. I'm gobsmacked, actually, and it's had a huge response.
Most of my listeners who are familiar with your work would know you as a writer of Rumi, also sacred activism. But the depth and degree of love that you've had for Kabir has been really amazing the more I read about that. And Kabir often is misunderstood or somewhat little known, I think, in the States. But let's talk about him, because some present-day readers of him liken him to, oh, something of a tough guy or a divine smart aleck. But there's so many dimensions of this great master, isn't there?
Oh, my God, yes. Kabir lived between 1440 and 1527. And he was born into an illiterate weaver family, a Muslim family, so lived on the margins of that holiest of Hindu cities, Varanasi. He seems to have awakened spontaneously. There are many legends that claim he had this guru and that guru, but I think they're legends. I think he was one of the very rare human beings like Ramana Maharshi who had a total awakening spontaneously, perhaps one that he'd been preparing for many lifetimes. He's not a smart aleck, and he's not just a tough guy. He's nothing less than the greatest mystical poet of humanity with Rumi. Very different from Rumi, but of comparable grandeur and majesty and range. Mm. There are 3 ways in which he's different from Rumi. The first is that Rumi was an aristocrat and Kabir was a peasant, and they speak in very different ways. Rumi's Persian is high and grand and peppered with Greek and Arabic, and his imagery is lush and extravagant. Kabir grabs you by the shoulders, shakes you, and speaks directly, nakedly, passionately. Mm-hmm. The second way in which they're different is that Rumi leads with a massive and profound tenderness. Kabir leads with a ferocity of truth that can take your head off if you let it. And the third difference is that while Rumi does speak in some of his most passionate and inspired verses of the transfiguration of the body, Kabir experienced a transformation which led not only to the divinization of his mind or the expansion of his sacred heart, but to the cellular transformation of his body, which I referred to in the title, Turn Me to Gold. And so his poems are unique documents of this most amazing of transformations. That's a hidden secret in all of the great mystical systems. It's hidden in Shaivism, it's hidden in Mahayana Buddhism and Vajrayana Buddhism at its highest. It's hidden in Taoist alchemy, and it's the core of Kabbalah and the core of the really great Christian mystics who speak of it as theosis. So I feel very passionately, which is why I put 5 years of my life into this book,
yes,
that Kabir is an essential voice for our time. He speaks nakedly, he speaks fiercely, he doesn't fiddle around, he grabs you, he talks out of superconsciousness with a directness that no one else has. He's already India's greatest and most loved mystical poet. He's loved by Hindus, he's loved by Sufis and Muslims, and he's also an essential part of the Sikh spiritual world, because 300 of his songs was incorporated by the first guru of Sikhism into the core of the Sikh scriptures. So in India, if you say the word Kabir, everybody will fall about and pray and in deep reverence. What I want now, my deep dream, is that this book will help birth a Kabir Renaissance, as impressive and as exciting and as all-embracing as the Rumi Renaissance, because in my own experience, it was loving Rumi for 40 years that softened me up in a way,
yes,
fired me up to be able to approach the majesty of Kabir.
The more I have read about Kabir and going through your book and then doing a little bit of research, I get the connection you have with him, because, my friend, many, many of us see you as a living mystic, as a man of deep and fiery passion for the divine, also pulling no punches sometimes when it's addressing serious concerns in the world. Can you share where or how your decades-long obsession with Kabir began?
When I first heard Kabir in a temple in Benares, I always call it Benares because that was what I called it as a child, and I was born in India, although it's now known as Varanasi. And I heard this old sadhu, wonderfully beautiful old sadhu, singing with such passion. And I went up to him and asked him what he was singing. And he said, Kabir, of course. And I hadn't heard of Kabir, but I was too snotty to say that I didn't. But then I immediately plunged into reading what translations I could get hold of Kabir. And I have a smattering of Hindi, so I could follow him. And it was very obvious to me from those first readings that I was in the presence of a major universal mystical genius. Then, in my late 20s, I met the translations of Robert Bly, which are very beautiful, although they don't bear a lot of resemblance to authentic Kabir. They're as much Bly as Kabir, but magnificent and very profound and a wonderful introduction to the field of Kabir, if you like. So I'm not knocking them or criticizing. I admire them very much. Then I plunged into Rumi, and Rumi took over my life. I spent 30, 40 years translating Rumi, speaking about Rumi, writing books about Rumi, incorporating Rumi into the core of my own heart and body and mind and soul. And then in my late 50s, I suddenly realized that I myself was going through a very profound transformation. I was realizing, as I think is obvious from my work, that we are in a potentially terminal crisis, that we need to get awake very soon. We need to dedicate all of our resources to helping each other and helping transform the society that is now killing the world. And I realized that Kabir would be my ultimate teacher in truth, in passion, in ferocity, in clarity, in majesty. And so I was living in a log cabin in Arkansas at the time. I plunged deeply. I met Kabir, if you like, in the depths of my soul. And out of that meeting and out of the extraordinary, extreme process that then ensued, because I felt that Kabir came into me and started reorganizing me on every level, out of that came this selection of 108 poems that I put into a mystical symphony that would help people get to Kabir, but get to the depths of the path of transfiguration, the great evolutionary path that I believe everybody is now on and needs to get on, because we need to be anchored in the depths of truth and fired up by passion and clear, free of illusion, to be able to deal with the challenges of our time and to rise to those challenges with humble majesty and passionate compassion.
In getting back to the man himself, I was intrigued to find out two things. Even though I'm sure he had a lot of wealthy followers, he always chose to live in poverty, and often in poverty-stricken sections of cities, which I found really interesting.
Well, he lived in the poorest part of Benares.
Yeah.
He resolutely remained poor because he believed that that was the way to stay connected to everyone. He was utterly free of any kind of greed or desire for his own promotion. And in that way, I think that he's very like Jesus. Jesus also had rich followers, but remained poor to be connected with the vast majority of people in his world and his, and ours, of course, who are poor. I think that's an extraordinary kind of sacrifice, which I'm sure he didn't make painfully, because he was immeasurably rich with the only wealth that truly counts, the wealth of awakening.
That's so true. You also have written, and this was the other point that I found fascinating, is in totally connected with it, Kabir, he loved animals passionately.
Yes.
And saw the whole of creation as totally sacred.
Well, this is one of the many ways in which Kabir is unique. There are three main ways in which he is unique. The first is that, unlike any other great mystical poet that you can name, I think, Kabir really threw away the shackles of any kind of religion and went directly to the One. He critiqued very severely the Hinduism of his time. He critiqued very severely the Islam of his time. He believed that religions have falsified their original inspiration and have chosen power over love. And he went straight to the One, and he offered a path directly to the One, which is massively empowering for everyone. That's the first way. The second way is that Kabir spoke very simply, as I've said, and that simplicity is itself a cry of faith in the capacity of every single human being to wake up to the highest truths. I think Kabir believed, and I think it's clear from his poetry, that anyone who truly wanted to could wake up if someone like him took the trouble and underwent the process deeply enough to be able to speak in radiant, fierce simplicity to them. And that's a tremendous difference from nearly all of the other great mystical poets who are often unreachable by anyone who hasn't had a major awakening, although very beautiful and very moving.
Yes.
And the third way in which he is unique is the way that you've mentioned. Kabir understood that everything is sacred. He had an overwhelming passion for animals. One of the reasons why he really poured scorn on both Hinduism and Islam was the way in which animals were treated and are treated in both Hinduism and Islam. In Hinduism, they're considered very inferior, having inferior consciousnesses, and in Islam, they're eaten and sacrificed and for certain feast days. And Kabir found this endless butchery of animals obscene. And this is particularly moving for me because I have a great passion for animals. My life is dominated by my imperial cat, Jade, and I have been profoundly changed by my relationship with my cats and profoundly guided by them into a different way of seeing the world. And I've been on a very long and deep shamanic journey in Ecuador and in Australia and in South Africa and in Namibia, meeting the great indigenous elders of those places and really understanding that one of the major drawbacks of all of the major patriarchal religions is their lack of compassion for animals, and more importantly, their lack of understanding that not only are animals sacred, but that in many, many ways, animals are our teachers and our guides into higher states of radiant embodiment. And Kabir knew this, and this is one of the reasons why I have a very deep personal love for him and think that his voice is so important for us now, because unless we realize that we've created a worldwide Auschwitz for animals in which we're slaughtering 59 billion animals a year to tickle our palates and destroying species at the rate of 150 to 200 a day, and unless we realize that in 10 years the lions and the tigers will be gone, and in 15 years there may be no elephants here, unless we truly transform our consciousness to recognize the sacredness of animals, the extraordinary consciousness and intelligence of animals, we are going to invite upon us a tsunami of black karma that could sweep the human race off the earth. So I think Kabir's warning about that and passion for animals is extremely important for all true seekers to get behind.
In this book you write, Turn Me to Gold is arranged as a mystical symphony in four movements. Kabir sang his poems in the noisy and filthy alleys of the 15th century Benares. He knew God as a supreme musician whose sound always rang in his ears. Only a rich musical form I knew could ever begin to do justice in the different dancing facets of Kabir's genius and their endless interplay. This beautifully done book is broken down into four sections, four movements. Can we go through those?
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to say something first about the relationship between music and mysticism.
Yes.
This is one way in which Rumi and Kabir are very alike. Rumi did not sit at a desk and write his astounding odes. Rumi would go into ecstasy, hold onto a pillar, start dancing, and out of that dancing, in deep relationship with the music that he so loved, would pour these molten cataracts, these avalanches of perfectly formed couplets that would be taken down by his heart friends and then later polished in a more sober mood by himself. Kabir didn't write his poems either. He was illiterate. He sang out of ecstasy to a lute, one-stringed primitive lute. And people who heard him sing his poems were transfigured by the experience because he knew, as any advanced mystic does know, is that one of the ways in which the whole creation comes into being is through an extraordinary marriage of sound and light, the combination of primordial sound with different colored lights in different combinations, when married to fundamental archetypal geometric shapes, archetypal shapes, is how the creation manifests, how form manifests. This is known in all the mystical traditions. And what's also known is that music itself is the closest of the arts to the divine, because it's intangible and it has an overwhelmingly powerful effect on the deepest, most sacred emotions. It can drive people to lust, but it can also drive people to abandoned states of ecstasy. And Kabir clearly knew that, and clearly knew too, and heard personally, the music that's creating everything.
Well, I'm thinking, wouldn't it have been cool to hear his voice?
Well, I think you can hear something like his voice in the great Kabiri singers that have followed him singing his poetry. Because ever since Kabir, there's been a tradition of what are called Kabiris. And if you want to hear how I think he could have sung, go to YouTube and hear the great Indian singer who died a few years ago, Kumar Gandharva, who sings with a precise adamantine ecstasy and a deep devotion, a passionate devotion that is mind-blowing, truly, truly initiatory. And I feel that in Kumar Gandharva's voice, we have a brilliant shadow, if you like, of the original voice of Kabir. But when you ask me about the four movements, I'd like just to read how I expressed that in my introduction,
yes,
because that probably would be the clearest way for people to understand what I'm up to. In the first movement, I am always by your side. That's what it's called. Kabir drags us nakedly headlong into his revelations of the direct connection with the divine. In the second movement, true lovers never die. These revelations become personal, fierce, alchemical, poignant, as a great struggle to die into life, starts and surges. The third movement, Nothing Left to Know, works with both the light and the dark of the one with increasing subtlety to unveil a mystery of union beyond all opposites. And in the fourth movement, Each Taste Brings Bliss, there is a marriage feast of embodied divine awakening, flooded with bliss and peace and gratitude. So these four movements are like the movements of a vast symphony. I was thinking really of Mahler's symphonies, which are in themselves great mystical masterpieces in which all the different facets and moods and revelations of an authentic journey, which doesn't proceed in a linear way but in a spiraling way, is wonderfully, wonderfully depicted. And in this particular book, I worked for a very long time to get exactly the right order so that anyone who wanted to could plunge into the book, read it from beginning to end, and experience what it is like through Kabir's matchless words to wake up to your transfigured human divinity. Really experience it. Experience it at the most intense mental, illumined mental, illumined heart, and illumined body level. That was my dream and my prayer.
Well, I believe it is coming true, and it did affect me. It inspired me greatly. Would you honor us, Andrew, in reading a few selections of the translations?
Oh, I would love that. I would truly love that.
You have such a great voice, too, so.
Well, I love to read, and I love to read mystical poetry, and I love to read Kabir. Try and stop me. This is one of my absolute favorites, and this is one of his most human, most divine poems. And it's also a poem in which, if you listen carefully, you'll hear the fullness of his realization. This is a man who didn't only wake up to the divine light, which is already wonderful and an incredible experience for any human being, but performed the next leg of the journey, which not many people have ever done, of marrying the light to the mind, to the heart, to the cells of the body. So it's a document, really, that everybody, I think, on this earth now, as we go through this vast evolutionary transformation that we're in, needs to pay special attention to. So here it is. The beloved is in me, and the beloved is in you. As life is hidden in every seed, so rubble your pride, my friend, and look for him within you. When I sit in the heart of his world, a million suns blaze with light. A burning blue sea spreads across the sky. Life's turmoil falls quiet. All the stains of suffering wash away. Listen to the unstruck bells and drums. Love is here. Plunge into its rapture. Rains pour down without water. Rivers are streams of light. How could I ever express how blessed I feel to revel in such vast ecstasy in my own body? This is the music of soul and soul meeting, of the forgetting of all grief. This is the music that transcends all coming and going.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Reading it has been amazing to me as a lover of mystic poetry myself, but when I hear your voice and your passion recite those words, have you considered doing a recording with some of these translations?
Well, strangely enough, I'm actually going to do one later this afternoon. I'm going to make a 30-minute video of me reading the first and the last movements for people. And I've actually gone all around Canada, but at least all around Toronto, reading them. And it's amazing what happens to people listening to them. So I would suggest if you really want to plunge into Kabir, anybody listening, do. Of course, I beg you, buy the book, because this is 5 years' work, and I'm presenting him as well as I possibly can, and I think you'll have an overwhelming experience. But read them out to your friends. Practice them and read them out. You'll find that you yourself will be Kabirized and you'll Kabirize others.
Yes, yes.
It's very important to make poems live, just as it's very important to read Rumi out loud, because Rumi himself orated his poems like a great Shakespearean actor possessed by God, and I think that's how Kabir should be read also.
This book, Turn Me to Gold, 108 Poems of Kabir, will change your life. I truly believe that. And so for our listeners who want to purchase a copy, where would they do that at, Andrew?
Well, they can get copies on Amazon of Turn Me to Gold, 108 mm-hmm. Poems of Kabir. They can order directly from Unity Books. Unity Books is the publishing arm of Unity Movement, which have done such an amazing job with this book. And I think between the two of those, they'll be fine. I'll get there.
Ah, that's wonderful. And for people to learn more about you and to track where you're going to be, they can go to andrewharvey.net. Andrew Harvey, it's such a joy. And I'm so excited about this new work. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this is all going to be taking you next.
Well, thank you. So am I. I'm sort of reeling from having actually seen this book come to life, because I was so overawed by Kabir that I didn't quite believe that it would be possible, A, to translate him in any way that was worthy of him, and B, to get a book out that would be worthy of him. But thanks to Unity, thanks to Brett Hurd's amazing photographs, and thanks to Kabir's grace, I really do feel that I've been able, with God's grace, to birth something that can help all seekers now on all paths get real, get down, get going, and feel the joy of their essential natures and start enacting compassion on every realm of their lives.
You certainly have done that, my friend. Thank you so much. Blessings to you.
And blessings to you, Richard, for all the wonderful work you do.
Once again, I want to encourage you to visit Andrew online at andrewharvey.net. And in closing, in keeping with the theme of dying to live, I'd like to read a poem that Andrew translated. You can find in this beautiful book, Turn Me to Gold, 108 Poems of Kabir. And Kabir writes this: "Everyone goes on dying and dying, but no one dies a true death. Kabir has met with death, never to die again. Everyone goes on dying, dying without a second thought. My death, says Kabir, is an artful death. The rest die and rot. You have to die, so die. All whirlpools come to calm. The house of love is far away. Know and feel this deeply. Nothingness dies, the soundless dies. Even the infinite dies. True lovers never die. Kabir knows. Know this. The whole world fears death. Death makes my heart ecstatic. When will I die and give myself in an ecstasy that never dies?" I really encourage you to pick up this copy, Turn Me to Gold, 108 Poems of Kabir. Always enjoy the work that Andrew Harvey is doing in the world, and thank you for joining us yet again. I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Dying to Live.